The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now, it is available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade and the former editor of Money and George magazines. And I hear he's just gotten even busier. And this is Beat Disease Part 2, because Part 1, as I am told, got some good reaction. True, Frank? And how are you?
Overwhelmed. Yeah, I'm fine. And it was overwhelming. I thought it would be popular, but I didn't imagine that it would get this overwhelming reaction that we got, especially from doctors who said, you know, thank you for telling people the right way to get access to the best doctors and get the best care. So, look, it's a very positive message. I've lived it. That's what we're going to talk about again today. There is a way to beat disease, and essentially it comes down to five simple things that you can do. If I did it, anybody can do it. I'm not no special person here. I just followed my own advice, and it's simple enough. So let's start with the five basics, and then I'll pick up where we left off last week. So, Jill, number one on the list, and you're on the hot seat for this one. Number one, you need a first-rate primary doctor. That's the building block. So, Jill, you told me last week you did not have a family doctor. So my question to you is, what did you do this week to find one?
I listened to you, but I have there's an extenuating situation which I am not going to take you into. But I did hear you, and I understand that everybody needs a first-rate doctor, a primary care physician that they can deal with,
absolutely,
and that gives them their phone number and that lets them talk. And I think possibly one of the reasons you got overwhelming response, by the way, from the medical community is because the dance steps, you know, of an actual interaction with a physician is the cornerstone of any healthcare management. And I don't mean to sound like but so many people don't talk to their doctors. How are you? Right. I'm fine. Okay. That is
we'll
so
talk.
Helpful.
And we're going to talk more about that. But
all right.
Anyway, here's the thing. So talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors. You've got friends over at Sharon Hospital. Give them a ring. Get the name of two or three good family doctors in your area and then go see all three of them. So next time we talk about this, you've got that rock. Okay. All right. Second, you need access to the widest possible network of specialists. Now, when people buy insurance, health insurance, they really think about cost overwhelmingly, not just premiums, and they're thinking about their deductible, their copays. Okay, that's all fine. You can buy as much insurance as you can afford, but what's important is access to a network of doctors that include specialists, because you may need a specialist and you want someone in your area in network. So if you do have to see a special doctor, it's not going to cost you a tremendous amount of money out of network. Then if you get really ill, this is point three, and you get something that could be life-threatening, let's hope that doesn't happen, you need access to the closest expert. Now, it's another mistake people make is they say, oh, gee, I just got diagnosed with leukemia. I better see somebody who has once treated a leukemia patient. No, you need to see the doctor who is the expert in the area that you can reach them, okay, by train or by car or even plane. That is the expert in that particular. You know, I've got a blood cancer. It's multiple myeloma. It's not enough to see a cancer doctor. I want to see the top multiple myeloma doctor. Okay, you can find them, and we're very lucky in the tri-state area. Come on, we can get to Boston, we can get all the way down to Maryland, Johns Hopkins, we can get to Philadelphia. We have access to these great doctors. Also, another mistake people make, I get the phone calls, I've just got a very bad diagnosis, some kind of leukemia, something like that. How can I get into a clinical trial? You don't rush into a clinical trial. I mean, clinical trials, they're experiments funded by drug companies. And they're not trying to come up with something that is specifically helping the patients. They're testing their drug, okay? So they're focusing on, for the clinical trial I got into, the focus was what dosage can people take? That's what they were trying to figure out. Well, if you're experimenting with a dosage, you can give people too much. You can give people too little. So people die because of dosage. But the drug companies aren't out to harm you, but they're not out to cure you. They're out to perfect their medicine. So clinical trials, highly experimental, dangerous. You sign a waiver that say, I understand someone might die here in this experiment. In my clinical trial, one person did die right in the middle of it. You would take that risk. Well, you don't rush to do that, okay? Common sense. But when your approved medicine, when the standard of care stops to work for you, okay, that's when you've got to consider all options. That's when it's really important to have that, not only that family doctor, but the network of specialists that you've already met along the road, okay? And that's the time that you get invited into a clinical trial if you're lucky, if that's what you need, okay? So we sort of, you know, the point we made last week where we sort of cut off Jill was calling these doctors, will they see me? Oh, gee, poor little me. Why would they have time for me? They will see you because they want to cure you. This, remember, you're talking to an expert in a particular disease that you have. So they're very interested in your case. Plus, you're a lot of revenue. You know, $250,000, not uncommon for the amount of revenue stream that you represent when you walk in the door. I don't want to be cynical about that. They want to cure you. They will see you. They'll take time to see you. So we established that last week. And so let's pick up my story there. So I've got this blood cancer, multiple myeloma. I've had it now for a decade, which is unusual. I'm way out there on the bell curve. And one of the reasons is early on, I through my conversations with a very good oncologist in New York City and my family doctor, I got the name of Ken Anderson, a leading expert in multiple myeloma at Dana-Farber. My wife and I went up to Dana-Farber. He was very happy to see us. He said immediately, you're my patient. And then he said, you know, there are two things you can do. You can take this pill that I've been working with from Novartis that's controlling multiple myeloma in my patients, or you can have a stem cell transplant where you essentially take out they replace your immune system, which isn't working, with a new immune system that they hope will work to control your cancer. Stem cells are rigorous, they're really tough, they're an ordeal, okay? And Dr. Anderson said, I think if you take a pill, you're going to get the same results that you got if you went through this very tough ordeal of a stem cell. So here's the pill. Well, guess what? It worked for me for 6 years. That's all I did. Took a pill, very minor side effects, and I pushed off into the future any chance of having a clinical trial. Okay. Finally, that pill stopped working, and that's when I took action. And this is important for our listeners to hear what I did. Okay, I spend part of my week in New York City, so I had access to Columbia Presbyterian, top hospital in New York, in the world. And I got myself into a clinic there where they were working with approved drugs, and I was getting these approved drugs to control my multiple myeloma. but I wasn't very happy, and I'll tell you for a couple of reasons. Number one, none of those approved drugs worked for me. I'd go in, get an infusion, sit there for about 8 hours. I read some awfully good books. But none of the medicines work for any more than 4 hours. Now, here's the thing, Jill. That's bad enough, but they had more drugs, whatnot.
For four That's hours? Bad enough,
but I wasn't getting full attention. I didn't feel like the doctors there, especially the lead doctor, was really focused on me. I was just coming. These patients were just coming and going, and I was one of them. I didn't feel they were invested in me, okay? The doctor, have you ever had this situation where you've sat down with the doctor, the way they've set up their office, they're actually sitting with their back turned to you? Have you experienced that, Jill?
No, I haven't, but I just am going to just go back a few decades with my friend Betsy Goff. She was a big, fancy sports attorney, and you know, her time was valuable, and we have covered this before. Anyway, she went to her doctor, and they made her wait for 2 hours or something, And she basically stood up and said, but it's the same mentality. She basically stood up and said, you know, I wouldn't make you wait. You wouldn't. How can you do that? You know, how can you not respect me the way that I'm supposed to respect you and my time?
Yep.
And it's that sort of thing. Why would you organize it so that the patient or the participant or the client felt like a part of an assembly line rather than an individual case?
Well, I can tell you why. They're booking. So you shouldn't book anything more than about 12 patients, 12 to 14 patients a day. I have seen doctors who book up to 30 patients a day. Very often they take Medicare, okay, and they don't get a lot of money from the Medicare, and they really do run you in and out in about 7 minutes. In this case, this guy had his office set up so that he never faced you. He talked to me over his shoulder, okay? That was bad enough. But the last straw for him, I didn't have an appointment set for him that day. I was just getting an infusion, but I had a question that I felt was critical. And I asked his assistant, and then I asked his nurse, if I could just grab 10 minutes with him. Oh, gee. This is a really tough day for the doctor. I'm sorry, he can't possibly see you today. He's just jammed. All right, I'm resigned to it, but I decide before I leave the place, I'll just tuck into the restroom before I walk home. I turn the corner, and guess what? There's the doctor at the microwave heating up his lunch.
Don't you hate it when that happens, right?
And he had time to heat it up now because he was now going to sit down at his desk and have his nice little leisurely lunch. Well, bad as that was, it's even worse. I met with, at this point, we're thinking, okay, I really have to have the stem cell, right? So I meet the stem cell surgeon. And he did not like the fact that I had taken this pill 6 years ago instead of having a stem cell transplant, even though I had gotten 6 years on the pill. And the stem cell transplant, especially at that time, only figured to give me about 3.5 years of results, of positive results. So I was ahead of the game, but he didn't like that I had skipped the line that way. And he thought that the reason I had the disease had now become a lot of tumors in my body called extramedullary, and the tumors were growing. The reason I had those tumors was runaway tumors like that, was because I didn't have that stem cell originally. Okay. I knew that there were no studies that backed that up, that point of view. It's not proven. It's a theory. And Anderson has a different theory, and I follow Anderson. So I said to him, do you have any studies? I hear you, but do you have any studies that prove that that would have been the way to do it? And, of course, he had to say, no, we don't have any studies at this point. And then he stood up and he said, but you have extramedullary with these tumors, and they're eating you alive. And then he went out the door and slammed it behind him.
Well, that's always a good attitude. I'm being
how
facetious.
How about that?
Just so the fair warning, yeah. You've got 2 minutes, and we know this story doesn't end in 2 minutes.
Well, we can always come back again. But, you know, he also, the same doctor said to a pregnant woman, she was not pregnant, she was a mother, and she was not 40 yet. And the last thing he said to her before he slammed the door was, and you'll never have any more babies. Boom. So look, when you run into situations like this, okay, do what I did. I essentially walked across the street to Memorial Sloan Kettering, literally across the street from Columbia Presbyterian. I'd gotten a recommendation from Dr. Eric Rose, who's got a wonderful house up here in Sharon. He's a cardiologist, but he knew a guy named Sergio Garalt at Memorial. And guess what? Sergio took my phone call 10 o'clock at night while he was driving to the airport. And Sergio said, you are my patient. I want to see you next week. Here is my email. Here is my telephone number. And I've been under Sergio's wing ever since. He went ahead and actually did the stem cell transplant on me. That was the best thing to do. But before I did it, I went back to Ken Anderson and said, what do you think? Should I have the stem cell? Yeah, I think now is the time to do that. And you could do it up here with me if you want. We've got this wonderful place up in Boston, or do it closer to home. Up to you. I went down to Philadelphia and saw Ed Stottmauer at the University of Pennsylvania. He said the same thing. And beyond that, he said, and now since you've consulted with me, you are now my patient. You are now on my list for a potential clinical trial if the stem cell doesn't work. So I had three consultations. We took the logical next step of having the stem cell. It was a terrible ordeal. Stem cells were much tougher than the clinical trial on me. All your hair falls out, including your eyebrows. You're getting a new immune system. The immune system doesn't really kick in with any power for about a year. So you walk around the city or any place else with gloves on so you don't get any germs. You've got a mask on. You have no eyebrows. I got to tell you, you can walk up to one of those fruit stands in New York City, and they'll hand you blueberries for free just if you just keep moving. You can go into a bank, they'll hand you $5,000. Just please go away.
So you made it work for you. That's good. Now, and we also know that it didn't work for you.
It kind of worked and didn't work.
And which is what led you. But again, it's an ongoing process. And again, obviously, Beat Disease is going to have a part three.
It's going to have a part three, but before I stop talking this morning, I'm going to reiterate what I just said. Okay, what's the core here? The core is you find the best doctors you can. You start with that primary. You start with that rock. You got to get that guy. An internist is better than a family doctor because they can diagnose, I think, more diseases. So I would say look for an internist. But if you can't get a solid family doctor, you've got his telephone number. You don't have to go in every time you get a sniffle. You can give him a ring. You got the family doctor who can then lead you to the specialist. And here's the thing. You'll never know as much as they do about the disease, but you know enough to have an informed conversation. And here it is for those doctors at Columbia Presbyterian I walked out on: joint decisions, joint respect, good guidance, doctors who care about you and want to see you do well. When you've got those things in place, you can beat a disease. You can take multiple myeloma, which can be dreadful after just 3 to 5 years, I'm 7 at the most, and you can live a decade and be in complete remission if you just follow these 5 simple guidance that I've given you. Find that family doctor and go from there.
Thank you, Frank, the healthcare detective and senior advisor to healthcare.com. Send your questions or concerns about finding affordable healthcare to healthcaredetective@robinhoodradio.com. Frank will try to address as many of your questions as he can on future broadcasts. Also, look for his book, Your Best Healthcare Now, available online and in store.